Welcome to this week's Books and Culture podcast with Books and Culture's editor John Wilson, and I'm Stan Guthrie. John, this week we'll be looking at a new book called The Routledge Companion to Theism. Why don't you just tell us what it's about? It's a big book, it's a handsome book, and it looks like it has lots of good info.
Well, it's moving up fast on the Amazon list, Stan, and I think our podcast will probably put it, maybe not in the number one spot, but somewhere in the top 10, certainly, you know. First, I want to say it's just really good to be back here in the studio with you. It's been a few weeks since we've had one of these conversations. And
family crises and illness and everything else. You know how winter is.
Yeah, it's good to be back here, and I'm looking forward to our resuming our regular routine.
I am too. Thank you, John.
Publishing is a really strange business. I have mentioned many times before my ignorance of business and also my lack of ability to grasp the world the way that people who see the world through the eyes of business and entrepreneurship and so on do. I'm not saying that in any way the way that some people might as a badge of pride. Like, you know, I'm not one of those, you know,
grubby business
people. I hate that attitude. But the one business that I know something about is publishing. And even that is full of all kinds of things that defy understanding. And one of the aspects of the publishing business that is fascinating to me is the proliferation of series like the one in which this book makes its appearance. And that's this particular genre, the companion, the Routledge Companion to Theism, is a genre that has become very popular in publishing. There's a whole series of, you know, the Oxford Companion to this, the Oxford Companion to that, to chess, to opera, to everything under the sun. Other publishers, including Routledge, are doing the same thing. And this particular volume is in a series called the Routledge Philosophy Companions. And you can see the long list of titles that have already appeared, some of which are very obvious, like the Routledge Companion to the Philosophy of Science, the Routledge Companion to Ethics, some of which you might not immediately think of, like the Routledge Companion to Philosophy and Film. And one of the two editors of that volume, Carl Plantinga, is a professor at Calvin College, and he's written for Books and Culture. He wrote a wonderful piece on my all-time favorite movie director, Kurosawa. And then over here you see forthcoming, the Routledge Companion to 17th Century Philosophy, 18th Century Philosophy, the Routledge Companion to Philosophy of Mental Disorder, which is one that I should probably read. But who, besides libraries, actually buys these books? Who reads them? How they're read? It's somewhat mysterious to me, but I'm glad they exist. Of course, I'm not interested in all of them by any means, but this is one that I'm interested in partly because the editors have done, I think, a really wonderful job in pulling together a list of contributors that includes many people who are distinguished in the field. It also includes some up-and-comers, some people I am not familiar with at all. Some of the contributors are people I know personally and think of as friends. But Charles Talafiero, Victoria Harrison, and Stuart Getz are the editors. I don't know any of them personally, though in some cases I know their work. And I was struck by something right at the outset that may seem to you a trivial point, but it begins with a brief dedication page. And it says, the editors dedicate this work to their parents. And then each one names that. It's divided into several sections. There's a sort of opening section called What is Theism that includes articles on various forms of theism. For instance, not only Christianity, but Islam, Asian philosophy, the God of the Jews and the Jewish God, Hindu theism, and so on. Then there's a section called Theism and Inquiry that includes articles on subjects such as naturalism, natural sciences, and so on. Then there's a section called Theism and the Socio-Political Realm that includes entries on human rights, war, feminism, and so on. Then Theism and Culture, architecture, aesthetics, music, and so on. And then finally, Theism as a Way of Life. So five sections. It's very wide-ranging. I have no idea the various ways that this book will actually be used, but I can tell you how I will use it, how I've already started to use it. You can see from my post-it notes here. And that is, not at all to your surprise, I've had it near my bed, and I pick it up at times, and I look for an article that catches my eye, either because of the subject or the author or both. I want to mention some of the articles that I've already been struck by as particularly good. There's a very good article on evolution by Jeff Schloss and Michael Murray. One of the best articles is Daniel Robinson, who's a terrific scholar on law. And his is distinguished not only by his insights, but also by the writing of it. The average piece is written in a style that is not forbiddingly technical, but is academic. When I come across an entry like the one by Daniel Robinson that is very well and forcefully written in a language that is very familiar with the academic idioms, but also is more accessible, not in a pop way, but in the crafting of the language, I appreciate that. And that's true of some others, too. There's a very good essay on sociology by Steve Fuller. Another one that I found very interesting is by someone I don't know at all, Douglas Headley on literature. That one took me completely by surprise, as several of the entries did, in the direction they took it. That is, you might say, well, let's see, theism and literature, what would he talk about? Well, what he talked about was not at all what I would have expected, but it was insightful. I did notice that he managed to misspell not only the first name, but also the last name of Alistair MacIntyre. Alistair MacIntyre has the unfortunate distinction of being not only one of the most eminent contemporary philosophers, but the one whose name is most often misspelled. And it's very often his first name that's misspelled. His last name is more often got right, but Douglas Headley went 2 for 2 and got them both wrong, but it's a very interesting piece. And then in the last section, Theism as a Way of Life, among the pieces that I've read so far and particularly enjoy, David O'Hara on community and Matthew Dickerson on irony. And the Matthew Dickerson piece, there's an example of a surprise, yeah. You know. And you're saying, you know, theism is a way of life, irony. How does that fit in? And well, Matthew Dickerson, among other things, I mean, he's a tenured professor of computer science at Middlebury, where he's taught for decades. And in fact, early in his time there, he was teaching a class on the side, which on his real love, which is Tolkien, Lewis, myth. This was a class on Tolkien. He's written a number of books on Tolkien. In fact, just recently one on The Hobbit, and he's written on literature and myth, and he's written some fiction and so on himself. But my daughter Anna, when she was an undergraduate at Middlebury, actually had a class from Matthew. At the time, I didn't know him at all, and it was only many years later that we made that connection. But here's the way Matthew's essay starts, and you can see it's an example of what I was talking about, of one that is not written in the strictly academic style, even though it's informed by that kind of knowledge. The world is full of seeming incongruity. Incongruities abound in the meanings of words and in the meanings as well as the results of actions. Human words, for example, are often best understood in some way other than their literal meaning, and so on. And from there on, he very concisely, he develops the topic, he brings Tolkien to bear on it, and the piece moves to an insight about the nature of irony. If we try to look at what happens, we can't, of course, see the world the way that God does. But if we say, what would the things that we see as ironic look like from the divine perspective? And that helps us to understand both why there's been a certain tension with irony in the Christian tradition, and yet why on this side of glory, it's an indispensable part of our experience. And so it's a really wonderful piece. Some of the people who listen to this podcast may be professors of philosophy. They may be people who are interested in the academic discourse about theism. I think that they would find this book of use. But I also think that many listeners who might not be professionally engaged with such things at all would find it a wonderful bedside book, as I have.